Hello and welcome back to Last Orders. This very special Christmas episode of the podcast is brought to you by Beckett's Gin. More about them in a moment. But before I do that, I want to thank everyone who has donated to our Christmas appeal, our Christmas giveathon this year. As ever, we've been overwhelmed by the response. Your generosity has been fantastic. To those who haven't donated yet, there is still time, and there is still time to get your hands on one of those exclusive, beautiful Spike mugs that we're giving away to anyone who donates £50 or more this Christmas period. So if you haven't already, do go to spiked-online.com/donate to give whatever you can. And if you give £50 or more, you'll get one of those mugs in the post. UK addresses only, I'm afraid. Once again, that's spiked-online.com/donate. Thank you again for all your generosity. Once again, this episode is sponsored by Beckett's Gin. Beckett's uses the best quality ingredients, like juniper berries handpicked in Surrey and mint grown in Kingston upon Thames. Then it's distilled and bottled here in London. Their flagship London Dry Gin is refreshing, it's zesty, perfect for making a classic G&T or a dry martini. For a bolder flavour, why not try Beckett's Slow Gin? Beckett's takes their dry gin and steeps it in the finest slow berries, creating a rich cherry and almond taste. If those all sound great and you can't decide which one to buy, why not check out the Beckett's Miniatures gift set? You'll get three bottles of 5cl gins, including dry gin, slow gin and spirited gin, all packaged in a gift box. It's a perfect way to try what Beckett's has to offer, and it makes a great stocking filler. Although if you order now, you probably won't get it in time for Christmas. If you're not into gin, don't worry. This year, Beckett's has also launched a brand new single malt English whiskey. This is matured in the same casks used to make Beckett's Slow Gin, giving it a smooth, sweet taste and a long honey finish. If you want to get your hands on a bottle of that, though, don't hang around, because Beckett's is only producing around 300 bottles each year. Fans of the show can get 20% off on all Beckett's spirits with link beckettsgin.co.uk/last orders. That's beckettsgin.co.uk/last orders. Now, on with the show. Hello, and welcome to this very special 100th episode of Last Orders. I'm Tom Slater, editor of Spiked, joined, as I have been in the previous 99 episodes and this one as well, by Chris Snowden. How are you doing, Chris?
Very well. Not only, of course, listeners, is it the 100th episode, it's also the special Christmas episode. Some people might be saying it's not actually the 100th episode because on your phone or whatever, it says 101. And
we are in room 101.
Only because...
Good Lord.
That's only because Tom did a trailer, I think, didn't he?
Yeah.
For the Battle of Ideas.
I screwed up.
So really, it is the 100th episode. Other pedants would say that actually before we started doing it on this feed, we were doing the podcast on the Spike feed, yep. So it's more than 100. But that doesn't matter. I think the important point is the important point is that this is our 100th episode and a Christmas episode, and it's very special. And for that reason, we have not one but two special guests, don't we, Tom?
Absolutely, Chris. We are delighted to be joined, returning to the show for the third time, Patrick Christie's, hey. Presenter at GB News. How are you doing?
Oh, very well. This is an honour. I didn't realise it was not only the 100th episode or thereabouts, but it's great.
The 100th
special. Yes, yeah, fantastic. I love it.
And also delighted to have Gawain Towler making his Last Orders debut, former head of press at the Reform Party.
An absolute Gawain. Delight to join you just after your Christmas lunch.
Yeah, after mine, we're at the IA, and we just had our Christmas lunch, and very enjoyable it was too.
And if Chris is anything to go by, it was mainly a liquid lunch, I think, so this should be a
we
very
had one or two glasses of more wine, why not?
So we're gonna take a little bit of a look back across the year, starting off, of course, with the nanny state. I think a lot of people, when this Labour government came in, who are of a libertarian bent, assumed that it would be bad, where smoking, drinking, the freedom to enjoy yourself is concerned. I'm not sure if anyone quite realised what short work they'd make of it. Right out of the blocks, calling for bans for beer garden smoking, weighing people at work, talk of limiting licensing hours. They want to clamp down on the junk food advertising. We've now learned that porridge also qualifies as junk food as well. Chris, it's fair to say that a lot of this was already in train anyway because of the Tories, but is there anything amongst all this plethora of wank that you want to pick out here and talk about as we go into the next year?
It's very hard to pick anything from plethora of wank, really. There's been so much of it. I mean, as you say, everything that's actually been put through Parliament, everything that's actually on the cards, rather than just rumours, and to be fair, the beer garden thing was rejected ultimately, and the talk about restricting pub licensing laws was just a really gossip. The things they've actually done, they're all this Rishi Sunak stuff. Some of it's Boris Johnson stuff, in terms of the food advertising. and the e-cigarette restrictions and the ridiculous generation tobacco ban. They're just clearing up what the previous government has left them with. So we'll have to wait with bated breath till 2025 to see what Labour Party policy is with this. It's very nice of the supposed party of the free market to leave this bequest of such a wonderful selection of nanny state policies that have never been tried anywhere in the world. And that is a point I would like to make. They have not been tried anywhere in the world. This generational prohibition. Ludicrous, mad idea.
I forgot to even mention that.
Right, you know, yeah.
Ushering in a smoking prohibition.
Actual prohibition. Yeah. You know, legislated for by the New Zealand government under the loony left Jacinda Ardern, and then rejected by the next New Zealand government.
Common sense prevailed.
Common sense prevailed. No other government in the world, as far as I know, is even considering this. Not even North Korea, Tom. And yet it will shortly
That's
be...
That's the tone in which I want this podcast to continue. Yeah.
In fact, they're quite keen on smoking North Korea. Old fat boy there. Yeah,
it's mostly after they've killed them. They then burn
Kim
them.
Kim Jong-un, he likes
He's
it.
He's also keen on junk food.
It looks like, isn't it? Yeah.
I bet you can advertise cheese on the underground in North Korea.
Yeah. Maybe that's a place to move to. So
say
go
what
back
you
to
will about
yeah.
North Korea. Yeah.
But you can eat cheese.
Yeah, yeah, the upshot is at the end of 2024, the UK is a less free place than North Korea. That's something to think about, isn't it?
That's a very hot take. Gawain, what have you been struck by with this government and its approach to smoking, drinking and all the rest of it? Were you surprised at all?
They are fun magnets, aren't they? You just get the feeling that Keir Starmer walks into a room and everybody starts dancing. he's that sort of chap. but we do know that the Deputy Prime Minister does actually like dancing as long as somebody pays her to do so. But it's got to be porridge for me. Actually, there are thousands of children across this country cheering the government that they're not being forced to eat salted porridge in the morning, mostly in Scotland, but or at least have it advertised. I mean, maybe they might get their parents to stop buying the stuff. But no, we knew they were going to do this. Mm-hmm. But as Chris says, he's absolutely right. All of this was preloaded by that great freedom-loving Conservative Party. And there's not going to be much left. I suspect now the Queen has died, there is going to be compulsory helmets on for riding, because everybody wanted to do it, but nobody was prepared to bring in a ban on riding without a helmet while the Queen was alive, because she refused point blank to do so, and they didn't want to arrest the Queen for riding through Windsor Great Park for not wearing a helmet. So that one is going to come.
Andrew sits on a horse, and the horse is wearing a helmet, isn't it? Really?
Well, fair enough. You know, I would.
Yeah,
but I think that's one that's going to come in. Beyond that, one wonders what more there is to ban. But they won't. I think the outdoor ban on smoking was quite interesting. They basically rode back on that the day after Farage went to America for 5 days, because he'd have claimed a win and they weren't going to let him claim a win. Shisha bars. Now, are they going to? They'll ban everything else, but you can still smoke Apple tobacco outside a shisha bar.
Yeah, 100%.
I think I that's one they're not going to go for. But what else?
Truth. I mean, they've banned truth, haven't they? They have. That's gone out the window, hasn't it? You say one thing, do another consistently. Now, I mean, the latest one today, by the way, just ignore the economics of giving the WASP women exactly what they wanted. The point is that Angela Rayner, Yvette Cooper are on record in very pious videos, in case of Yvette Cooper, surrounded by WASPy women, saying, when we come to power, we're going to give you exactly what you want. And then today it's turned out that they're not. Again, there's an economic case for not doing so, but my point is they lied about it. Mm-hmm. And they're lying about all sorts. I mean, it's also nice to know where they draw the line with this stuff. So you can't advertise cheese on the underground. There was that guy, the comedian, who had, it was called the Hot Diggity Dog Tour that he was doing. And he had to replace the hot dog with a cucumber for it. But you can advertise death on the London Underground.
You can celebrate death.
Assisted dying.
Great, you could smiley faces.
You could take out adverts. You could take out adverts at a tube station just in case you were quivering on the edge of throwing yourself in front of the Bakerloo line, right? You can take out an advert for that, but you cannot advertise a burger or some chocolate.
But that advert would suggest the idea you're on the Bakerloo line. You want to go somewhere in this North Stanmore-y type way, which understandably is slightly suicidal. But you get that idea. You know that the great story, something happened on the tube and everybody started cheering? Yeah. Well, those adverts were everybody started cheering. You jump in front of the train and the adverts cheer. And they're going to be moving adverts quite soon, like Harry Potter. But those that sort of disconnect between normal cheese, hot dogs, and cheering suicide is we've entered a bizarre world.
And where's it going to go next, Chris, do you think, in terms of what they want to come down on? I know you've already talked a little bit about, on the podcast, things like gambling potentially being in the frame next.
Oh, it is
just
definitely.
Roll on to the next.
Yeah, yeah. Next
Salt, of course.
Gambling, 100%. I think we talked before about how one of Labour's biggest donors is a huge anti-gambling fanatic. So I'd be surprised if they don't do much on that. I think there's more to do with smoking. I mean, people are thinking, well, they're literally prohibiting smoking. Surely they're going to draw a line under it. There won't be the end of it, you know, because then, you know, Action on Smoking Now haven't disbanded, despite this law basically sailing through. There's other things in that Javid Khan report, which included the generational ban a couple of years ago. They've got the whole idea of painting cigarettes green.
And wasn't it,
for example,
putting warning,
taking the nicotine out because it puts you off smoking.
To make them look a bit weird.
Green fag.
Yeah, green or brown, apparently. Cool, that puts you off.
Yeah, I do. People actually buy licorice papers to have brown cigarettes anyhow. So people actually volunteer to do
the fact that these things aren't going to work is hardly going to stop them doing it. This is public health we're talking about.
I think that the next thing, ash and that collective will move on to booze and move on to salt and move on to sugar and move on to everything else. They are fully trained in the anti-smoking thing, and they are moving on. They're moving on.
There was an article in the British Medical Association last week saying, you know, Christmas is coming, and what better time could there be to rethink our society's normalization of alcohol? Why do we allow alcohol to be so normalized in this country? The obvious answer being that it's normal. It's been normal for centuries. It was around before
generations.
Christmas.
Yeah. Yes, generations.
Alcohol's been around long before Christmas. It'll be around long after these public health people.
Don't they argue that civilization was either about bread or about beer? And currently it's bread, but every time they discover a new archaeological discovery, they push back whether it's bread or beer first.
Yeah.
The thing that created civilization.
Exactly right. There's a brilliant
book. I think it's bread now, but it'll be beer next time.
Indeed. A brilliant book by Edward Slingerland, listeners called Drunk, which basically says that alcohol and getting drunk specifically was really the thing that allowed civilization to flourish.
Well, at least it allowed breeding to flourish.
Famously. Stole the title of my autobiography.
As the sole teetotaler at this table, this is, you know.
Yeah.
What a wound you're inflicting on Western civilization. But
yeah, well, I know. Although, to be fair, I do think I probably had enough to account for several different lifetimes. So
well, precisely.
I've done my bit. Yeah,
I'm catching up with the gaps.
Fine. Yeah.
How do you find Christmas now as a sober man? Is it a difficult time of year for you?
Not so much, because you just kind of get used to it. I mean, also, the hours I work really help, because I finish work at 11. I'm out of the office at maybe half 11. So the bits of people drinking I see are, when I walk home, people covered in their own sick and piss, lying by a canal on their own, shivering.
How about drinking?
And it's like, but that's what I physically see. And that doesn't make me want to reach for that first drink again, to be honest.
Okay.
You know, I don't mind it. I quite like being around it. Like, I don't mind. I'm 2.5 years now, right? And I've got married, I've been on honeymoon, I've had all sorts of life events. I don't really care about it anymore. And I like being around it because people are a laugh generally. And I don't wake up with any of the hangovers. I mean, I've got no desire. Yeah, I'm very conflicted about things like Dry January. I've been asked to get on board with some kind of Dry January event in the House of Commons. I don't really know if I want to, you know, because I think, I don't know, I don't really want to be seen to be trying to convince anyone to do anything else. Unfortunately, I was in a position where I just had to stop, otherwise I'd be dead now. But most people aren't like that. So just crack on, really.
Yeah, so it's one thing stopping drinking, it's another thing being sanctimonious and demanding other people to do. Yeah, that's
it's kind of weird.
When I gave up smoking for 4 years, and I would always have lighters with me, just as a proof that I've not become a sanctimonious twerp. In order that I can light other people's cigarettes. No, it's Patches, okay. Patches carry on.
His bottle opener,
carry on. Corkscrew bottle opener.
White nice.
This is why you have a Swiss Army knife. It's absolutely part of that deal.
Even by going teetotal, you still don't want to let them win. In some
quite.
So let's not become sanctimonious.
It wasn't. You didn't do it out of some moral high position to end the curse.
Oh, no. No, absolutely. I did it because I was fed up with throwing up blood away.
Well, that was
pretty
bad idea.
I'll do it
for anyone. Chris, before we move away from some of the nanny state stories for a second, you wanted to talk about Chris Whitty? friend of the show.
Only to say, once again, how much I hate him. I think it was quite low status to hate Chris Whitty during the pandemic, but I think it's quite high status now. And looking
back, the most Chris Snowden thing you've ever said.
I think looking back, we should have hated
high status hate.
We should have hated him all along.
It's a new blog.
He is, as I said in a piece for The Critic recently, he is a slap-headed Rasputin whispering terrible ideas into the ears of our
leaders. So you tried to kill him by poisoning, stabbing and drowning.
His latest wheeze in his new chief medical officer's report, which is meant to be about urban health, whatever that is to have a tax on sugar and salt. What an original idea.
Same thing that Henry surely not.
Said and Nesta said and everybody. It's boring apart from anything else. And also I'd be amazed if even this government actually introduces it because obviously it increases it.
Why doesn't he just introduce a smile tax?
Well, he certainly
which
you've
got
pay
facial
that,
recognition
really.
Technology. Yeah,
seen such a
see somebody walking person. Down the street with a smile, that's threepence. Every smile, another threepence.
Wouldn't surprise
because you're doing something wrong. It's clearly, exactly. If you're smiling, something's going on in your head which is wrong.
And it'll have a knock-on impact. So you might have been drinking, you might have been
smoking. Precisely, that's wrong.
Yourself, probably have been. You know.
I just had sex.
Yeah.
That's now. Very wrong.
He's just, everybody
well, I don't
else.
Think he does he? It's probably the problem.
He doesn't. Oh, didn't he have enough? He doesn't really exude joy de vivre, does he?
No.
Bonhomie.
Or sex appeal.
Chris Whitty. If he's going around telling you how to live. You look at Chris Whitty and go, well, I'd rather not live like that. Well, I don't know how he lives, but it's not going to be like that for me.
Back on the Bakerloon line now, aren't you?
Chris Whitty, I just wish he'd shuffle off the stage. Same as everybody else in that COVID period that we sort of put to the back of our mind. He's still there.
Yeah, because the rest
it's quite
of them
irksome.
Balance has gone.
They've all gone, they've all basically. Sort of shuffled obviously, off Boris and all these people are gone.
Ferguson
and
come back. He will. He always does.
Ferguson.
No, he came back after Foot and Mouth, didn't he?
That's true.
We might have another monkeypox out there.
I would suspect.
In the summer, and he might do some modelling.
Probably at North.
Right, everyone's dead again. So, better lock yourselves up while I shag a mistress. Allegedly.
No, I think that was pretty. No.
I think he did
that.
Proven. Yeah. No, he did. I withdraw my allegedly. I withdraw it. He definitely did. Well, you mentioned urban health. What is urban health? Is it just the words NHS, the letters NHS written in graffiti on the side of a tube? people break dancing in front of it. What is it?
It's the people who trained in dancing during COVID. You know, the nurses, the dancing nurses, and the pop pan hissers.
Is that? No, that's just NHS.
No,
health,
that's
it?
Urban
health, I think, is just the health of people who live in cities. And Whitty is saying that there are things that we can do to people who live in cities to make them healthier, such as taxing salt for some reason.
Only city dwellers have to pay tax on salt. So if you get your pack of Walkers in London, you pay more than if you buy it in Dorset, say.
Yeah, well, you spotted the flaw here. I think he was I think he was asked to write something about urban health and saying why is it that people who live in cities are less healthy than people in the countryside. And he just decided to crowbar in this thing, which is just an obsession of people in that kind of world, you know, of we need to tax sugar and salt, which I've got to say, just finally, salt does not contain any calories. It's literally the only part of the food system that contains no calories.
Water.
So why food? Okay. Liquid. Well, let's go with solids, right? It doesn't contain
any. You didn't think we'd get into this kind of depth here.
It is rather like taxing water to cure obesity, right? It contains no calories. It's the only way, actually, you can make food taste better without putting any calories in it. I think there's a strong case for having saltier food.
Isn't the salt,
actually,
isn't the salt
deal
there,
with obesity.
Isn't the salt there to stop you having a heart attack, not to stop you getting fat?
Yeah, that's the idea. But
so the salt tax is an anti-heart attack.
That was the original idea.
Sugar tax is anti-fatness.
Yeah, but that's not how they're portraying it these days. They're saying, in order to deal with obesity, we need to cut down on salt.
If you want
sugar.
To stop obesity, surely you should body shame people.
Well, this is
that
the,
would be
a bit
much
of a
cheaper,
recurring theme. On
it'd be a cheaper way of doing it.
Yeah, who was
rather
saying,
than tax
who was saying
people,
this?
Just laugh at
it. It came up a lot at our live show. People suggesting this as an alternative to all of this. Bring
who
back
would you
body shame.
Who would you
no,
like
to body Simon Evans was saying we should bring
me
we
when I wake up and look at myself in the mirror
health.
Mostly.
who would you like to body shame?
I don't want to body shame anyone. I genuinely don't care how fat people are, except for the bloke who sat down next to me at Gatwick Airport as I was on the train the other day. And they haven't got armrests on a lot of the southern trains. Right?
it's personal with it.
And this guy got down, sat down next to me, and he did sort of apologise. He was a very big fella. He did sort of apologise, but I said, I'm thinking, I don't care, just stand up. Just stand up. It's only half out of London. Stand up. Don't squeeze me in here. You know? So I think the only time we've ever got any legitimate reason to dislike fat people is on aeroplanes and trains.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And particularly if they haven't got armrests.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who did you want to be? Who did you want to body shame then, Patrick? You asked the question, so I imagine it's on your mind. Is there anyone?
No, well, that wasn't really. I mean, I kind of just look around sometimes and some of these people that are giving very sanctimonious health advice, I just think you're not in great nick. You know, I'd like to body shame my GP. I'd really like to body shame my GP.
You want a name and shame right here?
No, I won't do that. But I, no, because there was a time when he weighed me like I was a fucking zoo animal. And then, like, and then looked at, and this was admittedly, when I was a couple of stone heavier than I am now, but I wouldn't say I was massive. This guy, when he sat behind his desk, his gut rested on it. And then, you know, honestly, and I looked at, if I'd have had a few parties, I was drinking then, and I'd have stumbled into him in the dark. I would have assumed it was Katie Price just by his tits. And this guy was telling me to lose weight, and I was like, piss off.
Do you want some more?
Yeah, look at yourself. Seriously. So yeah, people like that I'd body shame. Hypocrites.
Right. People who are body shaming you, essentially.
Yeah.
It's tit for tat.
Double tit, large
tit for tat.
Move, tits for tat.
Moves for tat.
Start my new podcast, Tits for Tat.
Well, gentlemen, I feel like we've covered the nanny state stories and policies very comprehensively.
Overdone. And very detail and subtly.
I want to turn to you, Gwen, to talk a little bit about another one of the big stories of this year, which is the reform insurgency. Of course, at the election, scoring 5 MPs, about 14%. Of the vote, also coming second in what 98 constituencies, and over the course of the past couple of weeks, continuing to make their presence felt both in Parliament and on the airwaves. Yeah. You were obviously on the inside of this.
I was, but I am now on the outside.
So with that clarity, what do you what kind of impact do you think reform are going to make as we go forward?
It's too early to tell, clearly. We're very, very disappointed about this idea of pushing elections back next year. Yes, the Tories are delighted because they're not going to be put to the sword. In the counties, it's the rural seats that are going up, and we are knocked because this was our opportunity to win a whole tranche, actually maybe take control of a county or two, and prove that we can govern.
Can I ask a question here? Because I saw this in our post back. Somebody was asking whether Labour actually can push the council elections back. Can they and how?
Yes, a small act of parliament. Easy. And what's they're being really clever though. They're basically saying we're going to have this 2 month full consultation. You see a proper full consultation in 2 months because you've got Christmas and New Year now, and then you've got the elections in May, and then it takes 6 weeks to run an election. So you're left with about 2 or 3 months. And the idea that bureaucracies can run a full consultation that period is for the birds. However, they would be very clever. They're basically palm this off and saying, oh, it's up to the chief executive and the leaders of the councils to decide whether they want to do this. So. Wow. It's the Tories who are going to make the decision. So Labour's pushing them into it. The short consultation period makes it damn clear that that's what they want to do. But when it comes down to it, it's going to be the Tory council leaders that publicly make the decision. So Labour can blame the Tories for pushing back the elections and saving their own seats. So it's a Labour idea that's going to actually kibosh the Tories. In the meantime, our lot are frustrated because we think we can cut through. And we need to cut through because we need between now and 2029 to prove that we can win stuff and do stuff. And without having elections there, well, we can't win stuff because there's no elections to win. So it's a big hit. It's a big hit to reform because that was our, we were making a huge amount of effort, huge amount. We were employing people and paying them money to run counties and regions so we could do this.
But it's a marathon, not a sprint, right? They can't delay the council elections.
You can't delay them forever, but we've only got 4 years to prove ourselves to the public. We can't, to get from 4 million to 10 million or whatever, we actually, everybody knows where our gut and heart is, but we don't, they're not sure if we've got a brain that's attached to it. And we have to be able to prove that. 4 million, great, because we know what you believe. 10 million, we need to know you can do some. And without these elections, we can't prove we can do stuff. And that's why it's so important to us. But it helps the Tories because they can push back disaster for a year. Mm-hmm. It's like sort of pushing back, putting fingers in dikes and stuff of that sort.
Do you think the Tories have woken up to the threat that reform continues to pose to them?
Clearly.
Because obviously you've had this string of defections in recent weeks.
Did you not see last week? Mm-hmm. Kemi goes to war with the lunch, with the sandwich. and Farage takes a mick and says, lunch. And Kemi comes back and says, oh, but no, lunch is... And it was just ridiculous. Yeah, no, they get it.
Yeah.
They've woken up, but I'm not sure if they know where the bathroom is. I'm not sure if they know how to get out of bed. They've woken up, but I'm not sure if they can do the next bit. Mm. They are aware of the threat, but frankly, nobody, I don't know what they're for. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows what they're for. Talk to a Tory, they don't know what they're for. And so it's very hard to compete against an assertion party that very clearly does know what it's for. Mm-hmm. It might, we don't, reform may not have policy detail yet, but people know what we're about and what we believe on a bigger picture. Mm-hmm. So that is a huge threat. But it's not just a threat to the Tories. It's obviously a threat to Labour as well.
No, absolutely.
As we saw in Wigan last week, where we took a 68% Labour ward and won it by 40.
Mm-hmm. And the vast majority of seats in which reform came second were Labour seats.
89 of the 90-odd seats were Labour seats. South Wales and the Welsh elections in the following year are going to be much more interesting.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to play for. And of course, today we've just had the most the how to wind up the world by having a picture of Musk, Farage, and Nick Candy standing under a portrait of Donald Trump, looking 25, wearing a cricket jumper.
Donald Trump is a young man, portrayed in the background,
but wearing a cricket. The man, he obviously loves England. He's wearing a cricket jumper. But that is glorious. It's not quite the Trump and Farage behind a gold lift in front of a gold lift in 2016, but it makes a very serious point. Musk is a free speech maven. I was talking to Nick Pickles only last week, who worked very closely with him, former of this parish, really, wasn't he? He was Big Brother Watch.
Yeah, part of the Tufton Street evil empire.
Actually was in Tufton Street.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, unlike the IA. Yeah.
Unusual for a Tufton
Street. He wasn't Tufton Street, but he's only recently, only about a month or so ago, ceased to be the number three at Twitter, at X. He's somebody who crossed the divide. He was there before Musk and stayed on, but very senior with Musk. Mm-hmm. And FT were saying he was going to be number two only in August. And so you have, there's no doubt that Musk does give a hoot about people's ability to say stuff and say stuff that others might not like on both sides of the boundary, by the way. It's not just, he hasn't just been allowing people on the right to say stuff that's a little bit beyond the normal confines of what we're allowed to in this country, but he's been allowing people on the left to say the same as well. It's just nobody talks about that.
Yeah.
So that, I think, is extremely interesting. Mm-hmm. Whether there's money in it, I doubt it.
And what do you think, Patrick? How do you think reform are going to be looking going into next year? Because it doesn't feel like the momentum is dying down at all, at least amongst your audience, amongst ordinary people and so on.
The momentum's not dying down. The other thing is that something is happening out there when it comes to 16 to 25-year-olds.
Yeah.
And that was previously the preserve of the left, and I'm going to, you know, include the Greens in that. Now, I think it's going to become very uncool to say that you voted Labour at the last election. I think, to be honest, with Keir Starmer at the helm at the next election, it's going to be quite uncool to say you're a Labour supporter. I think the Tories brand is significantly tarnished. I mean, I'm sympathetic to Kemi Badenoch and you know, several Tory MPs, don't get me wrong, but that brand is gone and she's not cutting through. That's not happening.
The week before last, the papers got terribly excited that the husband of a Tory MP joined Reform.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At that time, and blown out of the water by this, you had Kemi over on the other side of the pond, meeting Vance, the next deputy president of America, meeting Pierre Poilievre in Canada. Nobody noticed, but they did notice that the husband of a Tory MP joined Reform. The momentum, it stalled. It's absolutely stalled in Badenoch land. But the momentum, and though, personally, I think it's ridiculous that you had headlines about the husband of a Tory MP joining Reform.
This is Suella Braverman's husband, we should say,
yeah. But at the same time, that is what the news values are. That is the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just don't think that some people on the left really quite can understand it. I mean, there are parallels, not just because Nigel Farage straddles both camps, between GB News and Reform. This idea of being a kind of startup that is pretty crash-bang-wallop, and pretty in your face and direct. And we've seen it with the establishment media now. I mean, we're beating Sky News and we're snapping at BBC News' heels. You know, like when I've got like one producer. I mean, it's me and like a 24-year-old Scottish girl who does my show. And we had double the numbers of Sky News last night. And I don't think the establishment can really get a handle on that. I don't think they quite know what to do with it. And it's the same with Farage. Like, you know, this bloke takes 3-hour lunches and he's fine with it and he doesn't bother hiding it and he chain smokes and all of this stuff. And I just don't think they can, they're like, well, that's not how he's supposed to do it. And he's like, well, he is doing it and he's winning. And actually, 18 to 25 year olds seem to quite like that now.
You were talking about 18 to 25s, and I would say below that.
Yeah.
So the 14 to 20 year olds, that's where it's really interesting. Mm-hmm. And during the election, almost, I don't know, when you were at school, it certainly was in my case, most secondary schools would have a mock election to get their kids in interested in what's going on in the real world. Mm-hmm. From what, there was a survey done of all those mock elections, and that's most schools, a third reform won.
Can you imagine the look on the teachers' faces?
The Greens were having, the Greens were strangling kittens over this. It was yeah. But a third of all, the exact numbers I'm not sure, but it's, I think it was a third of all of these sixth form school elections voted reform.
You can imagine that. All of that drag queen story time and this is how you fuckers repay me.
Exactly.
The thing is, they're not thick. And because the propaganda being forced into schools is so, so obvious, I don't, again, when I was at school, if I was getting that sort of rubbish, I'd have rebelled against it. Well, guess what? They are. And they see it for what it is. Nobody likes to have rubbish forced down their throat. Maybe salt.
Yeah,
but a normal teenager is going to rebel against sanctimonious, fat-headed adults telling them what is good for them.
I love the idea now that at some point, some of my previous friends who are now unbelievably bone-crushingly woke, they started to have kids, and in about 15 years' time, they're going to come home to see their kid watching a video of me talking about a boatload of channel migrants, and the kids really enjoy my content. And then we'll see who wins, won't we? Yeah.
Anyway, that reminds me, Patrick. Me and you need to get a selfie for my daughter later on.
Oh really? Okay, good stuff.
Gwen, you mentioned Donald Trump there very briefly, and I know before we get to our final round, where I'll ask you gentlemen for, if you had to have one ban, what would it be? And reach into the postbag briefly. Chris, do you want to talk about Donald Trump, who's made some announcements about daylight savings time in the US? This is a particular issue that really animates you, Peter Hitchens, and about six other people. Do you want to give some more? Just give us the nutshell of what's been happening here and what you think about it.
I wish I could, Tom. It's actually quite hard to work out what Mr. Trump is talking about here. Normally, he's very articulate and clear. But he put a tweet out saying that he's going to abolish daylight saving time because it's unpopular with everyone apart from a small clique of people. And this, on the face of it, would seem to suit the narrative of the Prince of Darkness, Peter Hitchens, who wants British summertime to be abolished completely.
Does that mean we'd go off Greenwich Mean Time?
No, we'd be on Greenwich Mean Time permanently.
Would that mean Lucy Letby's a lot longer in prison?
It would.
An hour a day.
Yes.
It all adds up.
She did get an extra hour a day in prison in October, as I pointed out to Hitchens at the time. Of course, she'll get an hour less in March.
Not if she's released by then.
Yeah, right.
Justice footnote.
I could talk about Letby in British sometime all day, as you know, Tom.
I've heard it.
You did, didn't you, yesterday?
I wonder what Hitchens would think if he found out that Letby was in favour of having year-round British summer.
Do you think maybe the spell would break at that point? Whatever hold this crazy baby-killing woman
you
has
would
over
think
him
so.
Would, you know.
I'd like her to put out a statement saying that she hates Greenwich Mean Time and loves cannabis. Yeah. So ever since she got to prison, she's smoked.
Huh? And aren't we giving the farmers enough hard time already?
The farmers,
to rip out
my dad's a farmer,
day.
My granddad's a farmer, my great-grandad was
and
a farmer.
They're perfectly
they can
happy.
Get up when they want. They're using farmers to defend the clocks is the most ridiculous thing. They can get literally
before,
whenever they want.
It was,
they're not
it
on
was
the schedule. They have to punch
it?
In, do they?
It was important for farmers before
they,
there was electricity.
They get up when the cow. They feed the cows when the cows start mooing, or just before if they're professionals,
yes.
Right? And that has is not affected in any way by what the clocks say. What the clocks say does affect people because unfortunately in civilization, we have to live our lives to a schedule.
Do we not have diurnal
And if
routines?
We finish work at 5 o'clock, we finish work when the clock says it's 5 o'clock. And if it's light when the clock says it's 5 o'clock, it's nicer than when it's bloody dark. And that's all there is to it.
Not if you're young, though. I have to say, when I was young, I loved later. because it was dark when I went to bed, and said, we'd go to bed now, and it's when light, and it's, I can't get a bit, no, it's still daylight. No, you've got to go to bed now, you've got to bed. But
we're black your curtains up. Let's get back to Donald Trump, who apparently is going to, on the face of it, is going to abolish daylight saving time.
Yeah.
Which makes it sound like he is going to make it the US equivalent of Greenwich Mean Time all year round. However, I think
they've got six time zones.
Also, their darkness period.
It's
even shorter than ours.
It's even more dark.
Well, it depends where you live.
It's the greatest dark.
It depends where you live. So their clocks only go back in November, whereas ours go back in October. And they go back quite early in March, whereas ours go back, thanks to the EU, Gwaine. Thanks to the EU, they go back right at the end of March. Didn't used to, but the EU standardised it. You know,
standardized clock changing.
Yeah, they made it the last Sunday in March, whereas it used to be earlier.
Well, Vivian Leinaker would obviously have
so that's
say.
Another Brexit freedom we could take advantage of if we choose to. Anyhow, my point, all my point is, on the face of it, it looks like he's saying, he's against me and pro Hitchens and Letby and all these people. But I think the way that America...
I want evidence that Letby's interested in summertime.
I'm going to live for this court case. Letby versus Snowden. The British summertime showdown.
I think that the Americans talk about daylight saving time in a different way to what we do. Yeah. And when he says we're going to get rid of daylight saving times, what he actually means is he's going to make it permanent.
I think it's...
American clocks are better clocks. They're the greatest clocks.
Although apparently, I think some of his cabinet, like Marco Rubio,
he's in favor. He's on my side.
Yeah, he wanted.
And he's now called, what, Secretary of State? Yeah,
it was actually called like the Save Sunshine Act as well.
The Daylight Protection Act.
There you go. Sorry.
Brilliant.
Are we going to be protecting candles next? Aren't we? No.
Well, that's essentially what the likes of Peter Hitchens want to do. He works, in my opinion, for the big light bulb,
big candle makers.
Candles and big candle.
Big candle. Big
candle. Peter Hitchens is in the pocket of big candle. You heard it here
big
first.
Big candle shill.
Another big candle shill.
Whilst we've talked endlessly about big candle shill, but let's go to a couple of postbag questions where we ask our audience to write in for our guests here.
Postbag.
It's bulging, eh?
I'm going to give you one question each because we're fast running out of time and I want to hear what your bands are. Gwaine, got a question here about the BBC. Mm. Who do you think your long time as a press officer, you think was the most even-handed political correspondent at the BBC?
Oh, very, very easy. Chris Mason. I've known him for donkey's years.
That's him sacked.
Yeah, fair. No.
You'll be gone by Christmas.
I've been pissed with Chris on numerous occasions over the years, and I haven't got the first idea who he votes for. I was shocked when they employed him, white working class bloke from the north. But
there must have been some kind of mistake here.
they pinned the tail on the wrong donkey. But he's very, very good. There's absolutely I was amazed, and he is there. Political editor, so good on them. They made the right call. He's an excellent journalist. He is a man who clearly is interested in the job, but doesn't want to tell you what to think. I know it's a very un-BBC thing, but it's true.
Mm-hmm. Fair play to him. So they're not all bad. Don't tie them all with one brush. No. Patrick, Barry Steele was messaging on X asking who gets rid of the spiders in your house, yourself or Emily Carver?
Emily.
She's just outside. I am collecting spiders.
Terrified of spiders, and if I see one, I have to give it the room. So I leave it, and no, I can't do it. Can I tell you exactly why I'm scared of spiders? I can trace it back to the exact moment it happened. We used to live relatively rurally, and we used to have those big house spiders, and I was probably about 5 or 6 years old, and I was messing around, and I kicked a little ball inside, and I'd gone into the curtains to go and get it, right? Cue, massive spider on neck, which I hadn't clocked. I had not seen this spider. My dad had seen the spider. And my dad just looked me in the eye and just started battering my neck. but with no explanation. And he left it a very long time to
did
say...
Did he do this often?
There's a spider. No, it was. He left it a very long time to say there's a spider. Yeah. So I think that's... subconsciously, that's what I associate
with. So you see a spider and expect to get beaten up?
I think I flinch, yeah.
Did you actually ever see the spider?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I did. Sure.
Was it plastic and attached to a string?
No, attached to his hand.
Patrick, it's another spider.
Oh, no. Yeah, we had lots of sponsors.
Well, there you go. So before I let you guys get out of here, I just want to ask you the question that we ask all of our guests, because we are a very libertarian, anti-ban podcast. If you had to have one ban, what would it be? Let's start with you, Gawain. If you had to pick one thing that really irks you.
High viz. I'd ban high viz. It's ugly.
So quick out the blocks there. Why
no, it's horrible. It's horrible.
So
it's ugly. I walk down the street. It's vile. You had all these bits of high viz everywhere. It ruins everything. It's the ugliest thing in the world. It saves a few lives. But but according to but aesthetics is more important, surely. Mm-hmm.
You've got quite a high viz hat on.
It's only because I was given it by one of your colleagues as I came into your Christmas party by accident.
Gwen is wearing a quite high viz Christmas paper crown. No one else in the room is, but he's holding it down.
Yeah.
Patrick, I know you've already done this before on this podcast. I think you banned Americans from the tube last time.
I did. And I stand by it. Fresh. And I stand by it. You're not getting to Leicester Square. I'm denied about this. I very nearly went for banning restaurants charging you for a meal and then charging you for sides that should come with that meal. Like right. if you spend 30 quid on a steak, you're telling me it comes with nothing. Yeah. Fuck off. Sorry. Anyway, I've gone for the phrase, politicians using the phrase to be clear, because they say it all the time and then they're not clear. You ask them to explain a rank hypocrisy, something that doesn't make sense because it's they're lying to you. And then they just say, look, I've been very clear, or to be clear. And then a torrent of shit pours out of their mouth that isn't clear at all. I would ban them from saying it. I would ban it.
It's on the ban list.
There we go. Yeah. Very popular. Okay. Chris, did you say you had anything you want to add before we get out of here?
I know you're
running laundry lists.
Every week I think of about 10 things to mention in this part of the show. And then I forget them all. The one, a lot of people won't like this. I would ban people owning dogs in cities.
I could get that. Little dogs.
Any kind, really. I mean, yeah, the bigger they are, the worse they are. I just think it's not fair on the dog. Yeah. I think they'd like to be running around the countryside.
You're just pretending. Humanitarian welfare.
It's not
welfareism.
It's not particularly good on the people. I see them.
You ban dogs, it doesn't make the dogs feel better because they're not there. They don't exist.
Well, they exist somewhere else. Or they don't exist at all.
Well, precisely.
But they're not suffering on a lead in the city, are they? Or in a flat. Do you think you should be able to keep dogs in flats in cities? Strikes me as very inhumane, Gwen. Have you got a dog?
Nope.
You got a dog, Patrick?
No.
Maybe. Have you got a dog, Tom?
No.
Right, I can speak. I can speak freely. Right. So I think dogs I find annoying anyway because I always think they're going to bite me.
Deservedly.
Well, maybe some people would make that case, yeah. Gwen. Fair enough. But there's other people who are less deserving who are also probably worried about being bitten by dogs. I see people walking around with dogs in the winter when I'm coming back from the pub late at night, and I can tell that their wife has just told them they've got to walk that bloody dog. They look unhappy. The dog doesn't look particularly happy, although at least it's getting its half hour of exercise. Yeah. Like bloody Lucy Letby in prison. And
I love how you're bringing this full circle. Just end it on this, Chris, because you're not going to improve on that as a...
I just think that it's not serving anybody any good having dogs in cities. If you're a farmer or something, fine, have as many dogs as you want, let them run around, but don't have them in cities.
Mm. Patrick, Gawain, Merry Christmas. Thank you very much. Merry Christmas, Chris.
And Merry Christmas.
We'll see all you listeners in the new year.
And a Happy New Year to you, listener.
You've been listening to Last Orders. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Please do take a moment to leave us a rating and a review. And if you'd like to support the show, why not become a Spiked supporter? Just go to spiked-online.com/supporters to sign up. That's spiked-online.com/supporters.